The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
All right, now my next guest hails from Clonakilty in West Cork and has featured on this show before, talking about her other work for young adults and for adults. But she has a new book out, which is called Idle, which has got absolutely rave reviews. Louise O'Neill, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you're going to be busy, I believe, having a chat with Cecilia Hearn.
Yes, I am. We're at the Dublin Literary Festival this evening, so I'm really looking forward to... I haven't seen Cecilia in ages, so I'm really looking forward to having the chat and talking about our book.
Yeah, you'll be in Merrion Square Park. Nice outdoor, healthy setting for that. And the weather at the moment looks absolutely great. If people want to book for that, ifidublin.com is where you'll go. Now, Idle, it's first of all, it's set in America, which surprised me.
Yeah, well, I mean, Idle is about an American wellness guru called Samantha Miller, who is, you know, very beautiful and powerful and successful. But Pat, she's also very earnest and takes herself quite seriously. And I wasn't sure if I wasn't sure if that would really work with an Irish person. And I think so much of the book is also ties in with the idea of the American dream. So to me, setting it in America felt like an obvious choice. But, you know, Samantha is from a small town, and in the book, she returns to her hometown. And I suppose, you know, for me, coming from Clonakilty, I know small towns, I can write small towns. And I think small towns are, you know, the same, whether it's in Ireland or America or further afield. I think there's a universality to that experience.
Yeah. She also has millions of followers. So therefore, that kind of volume would not be possible really in Ireland, or not very common in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, she has millions of followers on social media, has travelled all around the world giving motivational speeches to her girls, as she calls them. And it's actually when a new book has come out and it goes to the top of the bestseller list, you know, it's on the New York Times bestseller list, and she writes an essay to promote it. And the essay goes viral. And in that essay, she writes about a sexual experience that she had when she was a teenager with her then best friend, Lisa. But then Lisa gets in contact and she says that's not quite how she remembers it, that her memory of what happened that night is much darker than what Sam is saying.
And it takes the bulk of the book for us to actually get to that scene, because the way you've structured the book, we go back and forward in time.
Yes. Actually, that's the opening scene of the book. You know, she's giving this speech, and then as soon as she comes off stage, her manager tells her that they've received an email from Lisa, where she's claiming that Sam has assaulted her, and then Sam has to go home, as I said, to her hometown, Benford, which is a made-up town in Connecticut, and confront Lisa for the first time in 22 years. And yes, this was the novel is structured like a thriller, because I suppose for all of the book, you're trying to figure out who's telling the truth. You know, you have a she says, she says situation. And really, it's about, I suppose, whose story do we choose to believe?
And this gets to the heart of how experiences might be remembered by different people. I don't know whether you ever came across it's a famous Japanese film from 1950 called Rashomon. And it's a group of people all accounting, recounting their memory of a particular event. And of course, they were all there, but their accounts are all different and contradictory.
And I think we've all had an experience like that. I mean, I have one sister. She's a year and 9 months older than I am. So, like, we're very close in age. And sometimes when we talk about our childhood, it's as if we were raised, like, in two, you know, different households by different parents. And I think, you know, memory is so fallible. But in Idle, for Samantha, you know, her memories inform who she is. They form her sense of identity. And so much, I think, of her identity and her work is predicated on this idea of that she's a good person. And when Lisa comes along and, I suppose, threatens to undermine that, it feels really dangerous for Sam. And I think, you know, she will go to increasingly desperate lengths. And we see that in Idol, you know, to protect her memories and to protect her sense of self.
The power of social media, you know, where so many people go to seek reassurance, help, confidence building. I don't know. I don't do social media. The program, obviously, we do. It's a useful tool in journalistic terms. But it seems quite narcissistic to me a lot of the time.
I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes with social media, we can get quite simplistic. And I would agree with you that it is a powerful tool. And particularly, let's say, for social justice, like, you know, Me Too wouldn't have existed in the form that it did without social media. And neither would Black Lives Matter. But, you know, I think you really see that in Idol, that, like, you know, her girls really want authenticity. And that's a word that I think we hear time and time again when it comes to social media, you know, whether these influencers are authentic or not. But I think the mere act of sort of holding a phone up to your face and speaking into it means that you're performing authenticity in a way. And some people are just very good at it. And we see that with influencers, you know, these people who have made, like, are making a lot of money out of, you know, whether they're talking about fashion or interiors, and obviously an Idol, as I said, Samantha is into wellness and new age spirituality, and she has found a way to monetize, like, the most difficult experiences in her life, whether that's her childhood or her trauma. I think she's found a way to, I suppose, make that profitable.
Yeah.
But I think most influencers would agree that when you let people in, which you have to do if you're making this your career, when you let people in that way, it's very difficult then to suddenly put up boundaries. And in Idol, you know, Samantha sees that when the allegations of abuse are leaked, like, how quickly her girls turn on her. And then we just see, like, her life begins to unravel, like, at a frighteningly fast pace.
And you track the number of followers she has throughout the book as we go back and forward, and then we rejoin the present day, which is 2022, and you can see that as the scandal, if you like, unfolds, the numbers of people who are increasingly getting disillusioned about her.
At the start of each chapter that's set in 2022, it sort of says her Instagram followers. And I suppose because Samantha, like, so much of, I think she needs that validation, you know, so much of her self-worth is sort of based on how many people follow her and the love and adoration and infatuation, really, that these girls, these followers have with her. I think it was really fun with Idol going back and forth, you know, because, as I said, most of it's set in the present day. And then you have these flashbacks to sort of the late 90s, early 2000s. And at the heart of that is this very just obsessive friendship between Lisa and Sam. And I think, you know, I mean, I was a teenage girl myself once, and I'm very familiar with that dynamic. You know, in a way, the tragedy of this is that Sam and Lisa both think they're the victim of the other person's behavior. They think the other one has hurt them in a way that they will never recover from. And yet they are still the loves of each other's lives. And in Idol, you sort of see that when they almost try to find a way back into each other's lives, even though it's very clear that's going to lead to sort of mutual self-destruction.
Yeah, and there is a twist in the tale, which we will never reveal to our listeners in advance of them reading the book. How about your own relationship with social media? Are you involved in any of the platforms?
Well, I'm on Instagram, and my partner he runs my Twitter account. I came off Twitter, I think it was around 2018, and I haven't gone back on. I'm a bit like you, Pat, you know, in that someone else takes care of it for me, because it is, as you said, a very useful tool to let people know what's going on, you know, whether that's for you on the show or for me with my books. But I find it like a very toxic space. And I suppose, you know, I think when you're in, like, when you have a job where you're, I suppose, putting work out for public consumption, like you with the show or like me with the book, you know, that you have to be prepared for like criticism, like that comes, that's part of the job, and that's fine. Like legitimate criticism is very valid. But I think when it gets personal, and when it feels like people are being abusive, I suppose that's where I draw the line. And it felt like with Twitter that line was, I don't know, it was becoming further and further to see. It was becoming harder and harder for me to see, I suppose. So I took a step back from that.
I mean, the abuse section gets a lot of attention. Politicians are abused on Twitter and so on. But even generally speaking, the tendency of people online on social media platforms to overshare. I mean, do I really want to know what you had for dessert?
Well, you know what? I actually quite like looking at pictures of food. So there you go, Pat. Like, you know, I suppose different strokes for different folks. I suppose it's really up to the person themselves and what they feel comfortable in sharing. Like, I suppose sometimes I wonder, like, I know even after Me Too, I was quite concerned about, you know, the almost pressure that was being put on women to share these stories on social media and, you know, for the good of the culture. And then you wonder, like, afterwards, like, do these women have support? Do they have people around them? I suppose, what kind of backup do they have there when they're being so vulnerable? So I do think it's something just to sort of be aware of, I think, of your own your own comfort level. But as I said, some people are just, you know, like Samantha and Idol, like some people are just incredibly charismatic, almost dangerously so. And I think have, you know, been able to use social media as a way of building incredibly lucrative careers.
Well, it's a terrific read, I have to say. It's called Idol. It's published by Bantam Press, an imprint of Penguin. And its author, who is going to be chatting with Cecilia Hearn later today in Merrion Square Park, Louise O'Neill, thank you very, very much for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you so much, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.